The Hard Shoulder.
With Nissan. Number one for petrol in Ireland. Number one for electric. Nissan. Innovation that excites.
This is News Talk.
The annual report of Amnesty International Ireland, which has just published its 2018 summary of what's happened in the past year. And apparently good news for Ireland. We stood out globally as a progressive voice for human rights in the year that's just ending, making it a landmark year for the country, according to Amnesty International. In its annual review on international human rights, the group said that the vote to repeal the Eighth Amendment served as an example of the power of women's voices in a year in which female activists around the world had been at the forefront of the battle for human rights. And as I said, the executive director of Amnesty International Ireland joins us in studio, Colm O'Gorman. Was the repeal of the Eighth the big ticket item?
Well, I think in Ireland it certainly was from a human rights perspective. It was the big breakthrough, the big success. Now, it was a long time coming. People have been working on this issue for 35 years. We've certainly been campaigning on it for about the last 5 years ourselves. And we're very engaged, obviously, in the Citizens Assembly and beyond in the run-up to the referendum itself. But it was a big moment globally. I mean, we know from contacts that we had with colleagues around the world and from women's rights activists and sexual reproductive rights activists around the world that the win here and the scale of the win was a huge shot in the arm for people. I remember getting an email the day after from somebody who was at a meeting of women's rights defenders and activists in Botswana who said that the room literally erupted in cheers. They felt that this kind of breakthrough was a huge shot in the arm at a time when women's rights at the global level are under extraordinary attack. I mean, when you see the attack on gender and on women's rights in the United States, the defunding of family planning clinics, the defunding of basic reproductive health care, including smear tests and others now across large sections of the US on ideological reasons. If we see what's happening in Poland and parts of Latin America with threats to restrict women's rights, Ireland moved in the opposite direction, where we repealed the Eighth Amendment by a massive majority, and now we're introducing law that, whilst it's in some regards flawed, it's certainly not fully human rights compliant, is a very, very significant step forward. That, of course, doesn't mean that everything is rosy in Ireland. I mean, one only has to look at the right to housing and homelessness numbers here. I mean, we saw a rise of 21% between September 2017 and September 2018 in homelessness, and 29% of the homeless population in this country are children. I mean, that's an appalling human rights failure. So yes, we need to credit where Ireland is leading the way, but we also need to recognise some of the very significant challenges that remain here at the global level. But the story of 2018 from a human rights perspective really is the rise of so-called tough guy leaders, you know, authoritarian leaders around the world who are stoking up division and toxicity to try to roll back on very significant equality and human rights advances that have been made over the last couple of decades. And that's a huge concern to us. In response to that, we see women in particular mobilising. Women's human rights defenders across the world have shown extraordinary leadership. Another example at the global level would be women human rights defenders and activists in Saudi Arabia who finally managed to get that state to remove the ban on driving. And yet, some of the women who led that campaign were arrested in the days after the ban was removed, and we revealed just last month that they're being detained, tortured and ill-treated in Saudi Arabian prisons right now. So women are leading the way, but women's human rights defenders are also under extraordinary attack with their lives and their liberty and their rights being violated on a daily basis.
And how would you respond to this kind of sense of puzzlement? When I think of human rights, I think of issues that you just outlined, like women not being able, say, to drive cars, or people not being able to the suffragist movement in terms of being denied voting rights. I think of awful atrocities throughout Africa, what's happening in the Yemen, and so on. So I'm looking at fundamental human rights. And then I kind of hear you say, well, of course, Ireland, there's a huge problem with homelessness and housing, but I do take the problem of rough sleepers, but a lot of them are turning down accommodation. They are getting something in the form of emergency accommodation in terms of hostels or hotels and so on. And a lot of people, you know, on this programme text in and say, hey, I'd love a human right of a house. I'm paying $2,500 a month rent. You know what I mean? So therefore, you can't say everyone is, you know, owed a house by the state. I understand people who can't afford. So my question to you is this. when you get into social campaigning and political and straightforward issues like equality and like housing and like access to healthcare, is that really the same currency as human rights, where people's, you know, basic humanity is at stake?
Well, I suppose it's
interesting. Do you get my point?
I get your point, but funnily enough, I don't agree with it.
Okay.
You'll be unsurprised to hear.
No, feel free. I mean, but do you understand? It's almost a definition.
But let me answer it now. I mean, you talked about fundamental human rights, and today is the 70th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. That declaration didn't just talk about freedom from torture or detention or ill-treatment. It talked about freedom from things like not having a roof over your head, not having the prerequisites necessary to be able to live a life of dignity. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is 70 years old today, sets out rights like housing and health and minimum income standards and all of those kinds of rights. And then that was given expression in law under treaties in the 1960s. And Ireland ratified, for instance, which means it signed up to and accepted as binding, the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights in 1989. And that makes it very clear that there is a right to housing. Now, does the right to housing mean that everybody can say to the state, you have to give me a house? No, it doesn't. It means that the state must demonstrate in how it designs and delivers policy or law or allocates resources, that it's able to transparently demonstrate that it's used evidence, actual evidence, to make policy and legislative decisions that are designed to guarantee the best kind of housing outcome. Now, when you say those aren't fundamental rights, well, first of all, they are. And thankfully, most people in Ireland understand that they are. But if you think about, you know, how on a daily basis we hear about children who are having to leave hotels at 7:30 in the morning before the breakfast buffet opens, which sounds fabulous, doesn't it? To go to their school, which is miles away on the other side of the city, hungry. Or parents who are having to bring three kids to three different schools because they're living in a homelessness hub. Nobody is choosing that, by the way. 29% of people in homelessness in Ireland right now are children. And the number of people who are homeless in Ireland has gone up by 21% over the last year. That is a human rights crisis. It's a housing crisis and a human rights crisis. And just in case anybody thinks that this is a newfangled notion, that Amnesty and others are talking about rights that aren't real, I think, first of all, people understand that housing, having a roof over your head, is a right. Let me quote you something that Michael D. Higgins said in his inauguration speech, and it's one of my favourite quotes from the Democratic Programme for Government of the First All, which met in 6 weeks' time. It'll be the 100th anniversary of its first meeting, and they proclaimed in the Programme for Government, it shall be the first duty of the Government of the Republic to make provision for the physical, mental and spiritual well-being of the children, to secure that no child shall suffer from hunger or cold, from lack of food, clothing or shelter. Now, those were meant to be the founding principles of this Republic, and that was what, 29 years before the UDHR was adopted, 70 years before Ireland signed up to the treaty that says there's a right to housing. So this is deeply embedded in our culture, in our values and in our traditions, and we're not delivering on it. And that's a failure on the part of the state.
That is very, very worthy idealism. But in the practical world...
Hang on, Ivan. It's idealistic to imagine that a child should be able to access education.
No. It's what I'm just saying is this: we've just come through a state where we were actually insolvent, where we actually had to get a bailout. And sometimes now things have actually improved a bit. But my point is this: there may well come a time in enforcing your human rights, you'd say, "Well, who's going to
pay for
it?
Can you imagine
who's going to pay for it?
Can you imagine if we lived up to the aspirations in that declaration from 1919, or if we took seriously our obligations on things like housing and health and education and had them in our constitution? Can you imagine, as a former minister, if you were sitting down across in the Troika and they were saying, well, you can't burn bolt holders and you can't do this and you can't do that, so you're going to have to cut in all of these other areas. And if you as a minister were able to say, that's all very well and good, but constitutionally, I have a legal obligation to protect people's rights to housing, education and health. So whilst I can cut back in those areas, they must be the least restrictive or least damaging cuts necessary, and I have to prioritise them ahead of bond holders and others. Now, you tell me that's idealistic or naive.
No, that's right and proper. No, that just is political rhetoric.
It's not political rhetoric, Ivan.
Going
back to the Greeks
now. No, absolutely. When Tsipras and those said, this shall not happen, what actually happened was he implemented all the hair shirt stuff afterwards.
Do you realise that the majority of states...
The EC
can't make you do something that's not legally possible in your own jurisdiction or in international law, right? So that's first and foremost. There's a serious gap in our constitution when it comes to the protection of certain rights. rights. And that means that the property rights of unsecured bondholders could be protected better than the rights of Irish children to have a roof over their head and to get a decent education and have access to healthcare. That's a balance, a rebalancing that needs to be gotten right. And it's not idealistic. It's fundamental to the values of any reasonable republic.
Okay. 53106, do you agree with Colm O'Rourke that these are fundamental human rights rather than political campaigning issues? My thanks to him. Executive Director of Amnesty International. Now joining us on the line is Andrew Anderson, who's an Executive Director of Frontline Defenders. Andrew, welcome to the programme. Tell us about the event taking place in City Hall tonight.
Good evening, Ivan. Yes, I'm down at City Hall here. The Mayor, Lord Mayor, is going to be bringing part of the Universal Declaration on Human Rights together with Nurdin Barta, a independent journalist from the Kurdish part of Turkey, and Michael Gaffey from the Department of Foreign Affairs, and the head of the ACLU from America. And it's part of a worldwide event that's getting Lord Mayors and City Halls across the world to be reading GHR on this 70th anniversary. We as Frontline are complementing that by projecting 20 portraits of human rights activists from around the world onto the side of the building opposite City Hall. So it's a good way to mark the important anniversary of the Universal Declaration and also the 20th anniversary of the Declaration on Human Rights Defenders.
And in your Frontline Defenders work, what's your, you know, current highest priority here or abroad, Andrew?
Well, we support human rights activists all around the world with emergency grants, with training and security, with advocacy on individuals who are threatened or at risk or in prison.
I get the generality of that, Andrew, but just tell me specifically, what are the hot spots of where you're most angry?
Well, we try to be reasonable, but one of the worst situations at the moment is in Nicaragua, where those who've been protesting against the government have been killed and or imprisoned or forced into exile, and the situation there is in quite a crisis. We see in a number of countries, including Syria, where one of the defenders who was at the Dublin platform 7 or 8 years ago was murdered just 2-3 weeks ago. But we see in several countries human rights activists being targeted in the context of armed conflict, whether it's from the government side or other armed groups trying to silence those who speak out about human rights violations in the context of war. And we also see restrictive totalitarian governments like in China who are jailing human rights defenders and torturing human rights defenders for them simply doing things like defending clients in court.
And Colm O'Gorman of Amnesty International painted a picture where there was almost a shift or a trend or a pattern moving towards more repression. And he spoke about America and feminist rights and so on. Is that a trend that, because one always thinks in terms of human rights, that things are getting more democratic and more reasonable. What's the truth of it?
Well, I think it's a little bit of a double-edged thing, because on the one hand, we have more human rights activists advocating in more countries than ever before. There are fewer countries which are totally closed. There's more people making progress on women's rights or LGBTI rights in Africa, in Latin America and Asia than ever before. On the other hand, there's a big backlash against that, and those who speak out are being targeted. We see more and more populist authoritarian leaders like Putin or Xi Jinping deliberately going after those who speak out for human rights and trying to persecute, defame, smear, jail those people. So it's a little bit two sides of a coin. You have more progress in some areas and you have more pushback because of that progress.
All right. Well, we wish you well with the important event celebrating the 70th anniversary of Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It's taking place in the City Hall. The reception is being hosted by the Lord Mayor of Dublin, Councillor Niall Ring, along with Frontline Defenders, the Council and the Department of Foreign Affairs. Just some of your texts I want to bring you. Absolute nonsense from Colin O'Gorman, as always. Nobody has a right to a house. Great. We can all get free houses now, says Ted in Dungarvan. Seamus McGoldrick, if you are living in a hotel, you are not homeless. Pure rubbish, says Bernard. Fed up listening to this rubbish. It's not a human right to have a house. We live in a complex society. In an ideal world, we would have plenty of housing, but we cannot as a country afford more social housing in the cities. People need to move out of Dublin. But John S. in D3 says, Colm hits the nail on the head. Why do those who continually have their snouts in the trough reap rewards, even in times of austerity? Lots more slogans for Dublin as well. After the break, we'll have the business news. We'll find out how bad a day it's been for Stirling.